This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast. Radiothon is now on and we need your support. This is our one time a year that we ask you to support Joy so we can continue being a voice for the LGBTI community of Melbourne and beyond. By becoming a member, renewing your membership, or donating to Joy, you will keep out loud and proud LGBTI voices on air and on podcast, and around 50 volunteers work hard around the clock to make them available. We hope you enjoy this podcast. Then we hope you head to joy.org.au to find out how you can support us this radiothon. We still need Joy. Your voice, your radio station.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation. SMS 0427 Joy 949, email onair@joy.org.au, or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
I'm Shannon Power, your host on tonight's Informer. Tonight we'll take a look at the bold move to make uniforms and bathrooms gender neutral at schools across New Zealand. And later in the show, we'll find out how people donating their frequent flyer miles are helping gay men escape persecution in Chechnya. But first, we're going to take a look at last week's talks in Uluru about constitutional recognition for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. Last week, more than 200 Indigenous people from around Australia came together in Uluru to discuss the prospect of a symbolic recognition of Aboriginal people in the Australian Constitution. The idea was rejected by the group, who recommended to the government that a treaty be established with Australia's First Nations people. The Uluru Statement from the Heart was put together during the talks to describe the position of the delegates. Makarrata is the culmination of our agenda, the coming together after a struggle, the statement reads. It captures our aspirations for a fair and truthful relationship with the people of Australia and a better future for our children based on justice and self-determination. The group also called for a permanent place for First Australians to be constitutionally enshrined in Parliament. The result comes after years of the government-created Recognise campaign, a multi-million dollar PR campaign promoting symbolic recognition in the Constitution. Alan Clark is BuzzFeed's former Indigenous Affairs reporter and the new presenter of The Point on NITV. He spoke to me to help unpack what happened in Uluru. Alan Clark, welcome to The Informer. Now, I know you weren't at the talks in Uluru last week, but I presume you've been following the news. Tell us, what's your take on what happened and what the outcomes were of those talks?
I guess the outcome was something that was incredibly important and historic in that, and basically after the, so there were over 250 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders, leaders and activists who met at Uluru to discuss constitutional recognition, treaty, sovereignty, all of these ideas that are very important to Aboriginal people. And essentially, the outcome was the Uluru Statement from the Heart, which made it very clear that the majority of Aboriginal people and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are shying or don't want to engage in symbolic constitutional recognition. They want meaningful change. They want a seat at the table, and they want the steps towards self-determination. And I guess out of that comes treaty. And so the idea is that there would be what's called a Makarrata Commission. This is one of the recommendations being put to the government, that there is this creation of a committee. Makarrata just means treaty in the Yolngu language from the Northern Territory. And essentially that would then work towards genuine self-determination. and treaties with Australia's First People. So I guess there was a lot of fear in the lead-up, particularly from community members who were really unsure of actually what was going on in Uluru. Aboriginal people, are traditionally skeptical and fearful when it looks like, when they don't have enough information, because before we've been we've had the carpet pulled out from under us by successive governments. So there was a lot of speculation whether this would be, in the best interests of Aboriginal people. And reading the Uluru Statement from the Heart certainly seems like some of those fears were unfounded, because the idea that we need self-determination, and that includes a treaty, is very strong from this summit. So going forward, the idea of symbolic constitutional recognition, which has been pushed for the last several years and has bipartisan support, but very little support in communities and smaller Aboriginal communities around the country. Essentially, that's been put on the back burner.
So I'm not sure if this is a silly question or an obvious question, but these 250 elders and activists and people in the Aboriginal community from across Australia were brought together last week to make this decision. Why weren't they just brought together in the first place when the idea of constitutional recognition was first put out into the world?
Well, it'd be hard not to look at the campaign for constitutional recognition and not assess it as a really bungled venture led by the federal government, both sides of parliament. It's a bit like putting the cart before the horse. Essentially, it was conceived by the federal government. They funded it. The idea of a referendum that you would include Aboriginal people in the constitution. However, that has obviously far-reaching. It's much more complex than that. I mean, it's changing our constitution, but also whether Australians would be on board. But I guess at the heart of it is that Aboriginal people were left out of that decision in the first place. And I think a lot of people became very resentful because they felt like this recognised campaign that came out of it was ramming down their throats the idea that, no, this is the way to go, and trying to force people into something they didn't really want. And obviously, we see the delegates who went to Uluru. They represent 13 regions across Australia, and that they're vast regions covering a lot of unique Aboriginal groups. And obviously, coming out of that, we see that, well, no, constitutional recognition recognised is not what our communities want. So the government has pledged that they would listen to what came out of this summit. So he's hoping that this is that they have listened, and a lot of those leaders are hoping that we're saying this is a litmus test for the government, whether they really do want to invest in the betterment of Indigenous Australians, or whether they'll continue to push for constitutional recognition, symbolic constitutional recognition, which is very clearly not what the majority wants. It's not a silly question at all. People have felt left out by that process from the beginning, and that creates a lot of suspicion. And
this might be something that is too hard to answer until we know what the government intends to do, but just say they did push for constitutional recognition and we had to vote in a referendum, knowing that a very diverse range of Australian Aboriginal people don't support this. If it came time to a referendum, should the wider population not support it in that case?
And moving forward, it's very unclear, I guess, the path from here. The statement is just the first step, very small first step, to what constitutional recognition or what form constitutional recognition will take. We're in fact the only country without a treaty. Canada has a Truth and Justice Commission, and that did wonders for community to come together and work together to close the gap, because they had to confront their history together. So I think there are many ways, there are many things from this that that can happen without a referendum. And then when it comes time to the Constitution, maybe it needs a lot more time for the rest of Australia to get on board. I think we're a very long way from getting to that point. So in the meantime, our community is saying, here is what we want. Constitutional recognition right now is not the priority. All of these things we can do without a referendum.
You're on The Informer on Joy 94.9. It's 17 minutes to 7. I'm Shannon Power. If you'd like to share your thoughts on this issue and constitutional recognition for Aboriginal people, please do contact us on 0427 Joy 949 or email onair@joy.org.au. You can get us on Twitter as well, at The Informer Joy. So we just heard from Alan Clark from NITV, but I thought we'd bring the issue in-house. And we've got...
Declan, hey.
Sorry, I've written Dylan on my notes. I was like, that's not
I've
right.
I've heard so many variations on my name. Yeah.
Declan Fry from Urban Dreaming, which is on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. The Uluru Statement of the Heart was, I guess, a big statement that came from the collective group of people at these talks in Uluru about recognition and treaty and what have you. Where do you stand? What do you think about this statement that's come out?
In terms of putting treaty on the national agenda, it's a big step. It obviously really shifts the mainstream national conversation away from symbolic recognition, which was never a meaningful idea. I mean, that was 99 and that was Howard. It never had any support at the grassroots. So it's good. It's shifted away to something that clearly a lot of delegates at that convention wanted to hear more about, and not just treaty, but also things like the constitutional voice to Parliament. That's more controversial because there are still unanswered questions about what happens to sovereignty in terms of being put in the Constitution in that way. But certainly with the abolishment of ATSIC under Howard, people do want a protected, ongoing, responsible and accountable voice to Parliament that does give us a sense of, you know, what direction we have and what the outcomes are. And, I mean, there are other things actually that I believe were discussed at the Uluru, but some of those have been considered unpalatable, unfortunately, at this point in Australian politics. For example, non-discrimination clauses and so on that do also have big grassroots support.
I guess that, I mean, in that might have grassroots support, it might not have political support at the moment, but is it a matter of prioritising which things, you know, the very diverse Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities of Australia have to move forward with? So is it now prioritising treaty and a person being recognised in Parliament over something like non-discrimination clauses?
I think what people are always looking for is just if something is done in good faith. I mean, there is an ongoing thing throughout the entirety of Australian history whereby offers are made and then we wait to see if that's in good faith. You know, Barunga Statement with Bob Hawke and many things before that, you know, treaty, of course, was also mentioned back then and here we are now. So essentially, it's really about saying, well, if we say we want to consult with Indigenous communities across Australia and we want them to have a voice, then we've got to say, are we doing that right now? I mean, there is controversy about the Uluru Convention and the processes that were involved and whether everyone was able to speak and what the agenda was. But certainly, look, as far as I think you're talking about that, the mainstream and trying to get a sense of direction, there's definitely positive steps being made in terms of serious consideration about what a constitutional voice to Parliament would look like in terms of having serious weight and, you know, even if it was, say, non-binding like the United Nations, it would have moral weight, it would have political weight. And that's why there is that sort of Mabo-esque fear coming out so early, because it is a genuine change. Treaty, of course, also... how that interacts is not something that's been dealt with as much.
Absolutely. Well, obviously, I think now the ball is in the government's court, and it's a very complex but extremely important issue for Australians generally, and of course, most importantly, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders people. Declan Fry from Urban Dreaming, thank you so much for joining us on The Informer. Heading over to New Zealand now, a teachers' union has gained national attention for a set of new guidelines that released last week. The PPTA is the Professional Association of Union of Teachers and Principals, who aim to improve secondary education in that country. Its new guidelines for schools is how to create a safe environment for sexual and gender diverse students. But a couple of the guidelines recommending gender-neutral uniforms in restrooms stood out and caused a media frenzy. I caught up with the PPTA's Rainbow Convener, Sean Cooper, to find out what the fuss was about. Sean, thanks so much for joining us on The Informer. I wanted to start with asking where the idea for changing these guidelines came from.
The real push for changing the guidelines was that we've taken some old guidelines that were focusing on really safety and the rights of students and workers as a teachers' union document, and transforming it into something that was more modern. The main documents that we were using to inform our revision, the first one is a Youth 2000 survey series from the Adolescent Health Research Group from the Faculty of Medical Health Sciences at the University of Auckland. And that's a 10-year research study at five-year intervals, so three different times, that we're showing the well-being indicators for LGBTI youth just haven't improved in the last 10 years in New Zealand, and we need to do better.
So give me an idea. These are guidelines which I guess schools can choose to adopt. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're trying to inform our membership. So that's all of the teachers who are part of the PPTA, which is the Post-Primary Teachers Association, or the Teachers Union, about what they can do to take action in their schools. And we feel like we can really lead change in this area.
This story's kind of got the union a lot of attention.
Absolutely.
Does that surprise you? Is that something that you wanted? Well, do you think this will help put the guidelines into more schools?
Yeah, I really think that the media attention has been fantastic because it's put this into the conversation of everybody out in the community. And so, you know, the main point of the work that we do, working part of the Rainbow Task Force within the PPTA, is that we're trying to be a voice for our LGBTI students who quite often don't have a voice. And so the fact that this has been picked up by mainstream media, there's been a flurry of attention, and that's been really welcome. What's interesting is that the media have mainly picked up on what they thought may have been a controversial issue, which is the idea of gender-neutral uniforms or gender-neutral toilets. And it has sparked a bit of controversy, but most of the public are actually supportive of both of those ideas.
Now, do you think that the public is generally supportive because New Zealand is a region leader when it does come to LGBTI issues? Or do you just think society generally is more accepting of the idea of school children having gender-neutral bathrooms and uniforms?
Well, funny enough, there's been two misinterpretations of what it all means. So I guess to think about the opponents of the issue and what might be controversial, the first misunderstanding has been that a gender-neutral uniform for all students means that we just have every student wearing exactly the same thing. And the guidelines we've produced are about affirming diversity in sexuality and gender identities. And so we don't want to just wash everybody out and make everyone the same. What we feel is really important is that students have a choice to make amongst school uniforms, so they can choose the one that best represents their gender identity and their gender expression. So that was the first misunderstanding. The second one has been about gender-neutral toilet and changing facilities. And, you know, people are saying, does this mean that the PPTA is asking for boys to be using the same changing rooms as girls, and we're going to have girls and boys undressing in the same spaces? And absolutely, that's not what we're talking about. So, I mean, the media attention has been great for washing away those myths and allowing us to have public discussion about the issues faced by transgender youth or students who would just like more private facilities.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you had any feedback from any schools yet that they might begin to institute these guidelines? I know there's a school in Dunedin that already has this idea of the same kind of framework in terms of gender neutral uniforms, but have any other schools indicated they might take you up on those guidelines?
Absolutely. As a member of the task force, I'm a full-time teacher, but I also volunteer my time to go into schools and provide staff professional development, which was another piece of our guideline recommendations, so that staff are more aware of the issues. And the schools, inevitably, that I go to visit, they're looking at revising their uniform policies and their response to bullying and, just codes of conduct for students, so that, mentioning discrimination on the basis of gender and sexuality is explicitly included and talked about in the values of their schools. So we're seeing lots of schools jump on board, and I expect that to continue.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. This is The Informer, bringing you the day's news from an LGBTI perspective. My name's Shannon Power. Now, being live radio, we have completely run over time, so we were going to bring you a story about some groups who are donating their frequent flyer miles to help gay men escape from Chechnya. Now, I'm sure we're all across that story where the government in Chechnya has vowed to detain or get rid of the gay men from that region. They've been throwing them into concentration camps, they're torturing them, and in some cases they're killing them. So Lithuania and France are the only two countries who've now taken on refugees, but men, gay men and bisexual men need to get out of Chechnya. So if you head to Planet Ally, they've got and Rainbow Railroad, they've got information about how you can donate money and your frequent flyer miles to literally help gay men out of Chechnya. We'll try to bring you that interview tomorrow, though. Declan Fry joined us a little bit earlier from Urban Dreaming to talk about the Uluru statement about constitutional recognition. He had some final thoughts. Share them with us now, Declan, please.
Look, I think all we're looking for is good faith in terms of many people say, well, we can have treaty without constitutional change. We can have a body that is representative and has that ear of government like ATSIC, again, without constitutional change. And it's all about saying, you can't give with one hand and take away with the other. I mean, there was controversy Uluru occurring while the Northern Territory intervention is ongoing. So all it's about really is, are people serious about change, or are they simply, putting things off for another day? So that's what we're hoping for, and that is something people are united on, is that this will be serious, substantive change. And if people are serious about it, then it can happen, right now, and it has been happening.
I do feel like there's a little bit of momentum now ever since the Uluru talks, and probably something that really needed to happen around this discussion. Well, that's it for another episode of The Informer. We will be back tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. to bring you the day's big news and a bit of a media discussion with myself, Dean Arcuri, and Matthew Wade, the editor of The Star Observer. And we'll also introduce a new team member, Alana. We'll be bringing you the biggest analysis, or best analysis, I should say, of what's been happening in queer media and news generally across this week. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au. I'd also like to thank tonight's guests, Alan Clark, Declan Fry, Sean Cooper, and I'd like to extend an apology to Bess Hepworth, who was supposed to be on, but we ran out of time. But we'd also like to thank our extended Informer team, including our panelist Corey, for putting tonight's show together. My name is Shannon Power, and we'd always love to hear from you. If you've got any stories you think we should be covering, do send us an email, theinformer@joy.org.au. And of course, you can get us on Twitter, which is at The Informer Joy, which is our Twitter handle. And we always love to bring you the stories, whether they're big or small. There's no story too big or too small that we won't cover here on The Informer, because we do believe it's very, very important that we bring you the news that you need to hear from an LGBTI perspective that you wouldn't get from anywhere else. You're on Joy 94.9. There is more Informer tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. Coming up next on Joy 94.9 is Hannah Caritas with the news, followed by Unicorn Youth. My name is Shannon Power. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast. Radiothon is now on and we need your support. This is our one time a year that we ask you to support Joy so we can continue being a voice for the LGBTI community of Melbourne and beyond. By becoming a member, renewing your membership, or donating to Joy, you will keep out loud and proud LGBTI voices on air and on podcast. And around 50 volunteers work hard around the clock to make them available. We hope you enjoy this podcast. Then we hope you head to joy.org.au to find out how you can support us this radiothon. We still need Joy. Your voice, your radio station.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.